Good morning. Our first guest this morning is Luke Carton, Park City's new sustainability person. Luke, what in the world is a sustainability person?
that's believe it or not, you're not the first person to ask me that question. I've been in my role since about mid-August, and I oversee, my main goal is to help the city reach their two goals. They have a energy goal and a carbon goal. It's 100% renewable electricity and net zero carbon for city operations by 2022 and 2032 community-wide. And what that means is we are working to try to figure out how to get our entire community fed with 100% renewable electricity. That's one part of the goal. The next part of the goal is to look at all the carbon. So it's the diesel, the gasoline, the natural gas, all those things we burn, but also some of our carbon sinks. Our open space is a great example, and try to get that number to zero. So when you think of, you know, the tailpipe emissions, that's driving your carbon footprint up, and we're going to try to balance that out through enhanced transportation and, you know, managing our open space to bring that number back down, the things that either get that number to zero or net positive. So that is my main goal, is to help the city get there on its path. To put it in perspective, the carbon goal is actually one of the most aggressive carbon goals for a city in the world. 2032 is a very ambitious goal, and it's great because we're actually on track. We're cruising along in a great clip. And the great thing is there's a really open dialogue between Park City and other major cities out there. New York City, Boulder, there's folks in Orlando that we've spoken to, also internationally too, Copenhagen, Melbourne. There's a city in Melbourne called Yara that's got some great goals as well. And so it's definitely a collaborative effort. And the great thing is it's an exciting time to be doing this too. You know, there's so many things changing in the world of energy and sustainability that we're truly on the cutting edge.
What brings you to Park City, this particular job, or have you been working in other areas?
I was actually I was brought to Park City just over a year and a half ago. I was actually working for Vail Resorts at the time. Came out to help with some of the mountain integration pieces and also help launch some environmental sustainability pieces at the resort, especially around energy and water quality. So that was a great opportunity. I actually worked for Vail Resorts for 15 years, and I loved it. There were some great people there. And then this opportunity came up at the city, and Diane and I started talking. We said, hey, you know what? This really aligns with who I am. I lived in Vail for 15 years before this and was super involved in the community. My wife and I started the community garden. I served on the planning commission for a long, long time. Really loved it. And I just love the resort town lifestyle. You know, it's amazing to have skiing amenities this close, an amazing trail network, but also the other great things like transportation network, the library, the rec center. You know, it's a pretty great place. And I've got a family with two real little kids, and it's, you know, my wife and I always joke we can never live anywhere except for a ski town.
Well, this is a good spot to be, that's for sure. Can you get to 2032 with today's technology? How much are you counting on efficiencies and breakthrough technologies?
Yeah, that's a great question. So 2032, you know, that's 15 years away. And you have to rely on both, you know, you have to hope for some new technologies, but truthfully, there's a lot of amazing things out there. And everyone only thinks of the, you know, sustainability as the cool new toy, the awesome new stuff. But truthfully, I mean, it's amazing what a tube of caulk can do to seal up your house. You know, when we, you know, KPCW studios are right next to historic downtown, and you look at some of these buildings, and everyone knows that they lose a lot of heat, and we don't need any fancy new space age technology to help fix that. We just need to start figuring out how to seal up facilities and how to incentivize things. So we have the traditional pieces to really get us rolling, to get the momentum going, but we also have some cutting edge pieces coming in too. The electric bus is a really easy example to point at. We're going to have 6 electric buses showing up here this summer. We're going to get a preview of one actually during Sundance. There's going to be one running around, and it's really truly cutting edge. And we're going to be having a fully, well, 80% of our fleet will be electric by the early 2020s. The great thing about that is, you know, it's less tailpipe emissions in diesel, but they're also, you know, a lot nicer rides. The buses have more torque. There's some great benefits as well.
You can talk about electric buses, but I'm looking back to last week and all of the traffic in Park City.
Yeah.
Just a logjam up and down Sweet Alley. How do you combat that? I mean, everybody coming to town and in their cars or rental cars.
Yeah, there's I don't know who originally said it. There's many people taking credit for it, but you know, next time you're sitting in that, and I live out in Silver Creek, so I get to experience it either on 228 or 224 or 248. You know, you're not stuck in traffic, you are the traffic. So there's just before us with Leslie Thatcher, Alfred Knotts, and his and the county folks were on, and he's got a team as well. So we're trying to really crack that nut, because you look at the expansion of people moving up here, and also the expansion on Wasatch County and all these other parts. So the roads are, you know, they're not going to get easier travel. So we have to start getting creative. And just adding lanes doesn't work. It's been proven over and over again. They actually use the noble gas law to show that if you add a lane, people just naturally fill it back up, because now all of a sudden it's the fastest way in. So that's why there needs to be kind of a step back and a wholesale look at how people get around and in and out of the city. There's some really innovative pieces coming, but there'll also be a bus rapid transit light line, a BRT it's called, coming up and down the 224 corridor with those electric buses. And those buses will have everything from lane preferences to light preferences to, you know, pretty much make it the quickest and easiest way to get in. And that's truthfully going to be a huge part of it, is to get people used to using the transit, but also truthfully to make it second nature. When I lived in Vail, the biggest shock moving to Park City was the amount of free parking around. And that's just not true for Park City, but it's definitely an anomaly kind of anywhere in the country. And I think that as the real estate values rise and those big, huge, flat open parking spaces all of a sudden turn into hotels and all this other stuff, people will naturally start riding the bus more and more. And once you get used to it, and as the bus system gets more and more dialed in and more user friendly, I think it's just going to be a second nature thing. That's going to be one of the biggest wins. But you know, we're trying to look at all options. There's talk right now, we're doing some research to look at what if we groomed the bike path from the rail trail kind of all the way up to just below the flagpole lot here. So just to give folks another way to come in.
Sure.
Let's look at all the options that are available to try to get folks out of their cars. Because like I said, adding lanes has been proven is not a solution. So.
Well, that's for sure. Now, Lynn Ware Peak and I have done a number of shows on Cool Science Radio about autonomous cars. And we're both big fans. And, you know, I may be overly optimistic about it, but I still see, not short term, but I see 8 to 10 years, maybe 12 years from now, if we get more of these vehicles out there tested, where we will have a situation where everything is turned upside down, completely different, where there will be a pool of vehicles that will all be shared. You know, you'll have a subscription service to a fleet of vehicles, and you will be home, and you will call a car to come pick you up. It will drop you off at the Egyptian Theater or maybe to a restaurant to have a bite to eat. You walk to the Egyptian. It'll go to a lot and just hang out outside of Park City. Who knows, maybe in the Deer Valley lot, because they don't need those parking spaces at night. And then that vehicle comes and it picks you up, and it also takes your babysitter home. And, you know, I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, and you look at how fast things are changing in that world with autonomous vehicles and those parts. And you can do, there's a lot of information out there on both, you know, Lyft and Uber, and that's kind of their end game goal, is to say, well, you don't even need a car anymore. And then when you start looking at coupling it with our amazing transit system that's getting truly better every couple months, and they're you know, constantly trying to look at how to make it better and improve ridership. If you start tying in autonomous vehicles to that, plus, you know, great bike paths and all this other, and rec paths around here, I mean, it's going to be, it's really, truly going to be more of a special place to live.
Sure.
Let me go back to the, excuse me. Let me go back to the charging for parking scenario. If you're a second homeowner here and have a big, beautiful home, and you're going to charge to park, are they going to care? They're going to charge. If it's $20, they're going to pay $20, or $25, they're going to pay $25. How do you get around that?
Oh, I don't know if you can. I really don't. I mean, you know, coming from a resort community before this, that charged for parking quite a bit. But also there's, you know, I grew up in the Northeast, and some of these lots around here, I'm not planting ideas, and I'm probably getting booed at by a lot of folks right now. You know, you got charged to park, and you're paying for the convenience side. So, you know, truthfully, you will never be able to, you know, if someone is a billionaire, $20 is, you know, not even a rounding error of a rounding error. So I don't think you can really go after that side. I think that the question is how can you make transit as easy, or if not better, than driving in your vehicle to get into the city? I think that's a first major question of it. And I think, you know, people will have to start, it'll just naturally get to that point. You know, as 248 and 224 gum up, and as they get, you know, if they get worse and worse and worse, people are going to start having to look at other means. I mean, it's just going to naturally happen. It's going to naturally trigger. So, you know, you always get asked the question of, well, you know, charging for parking is going to cause a headache and all this other stuff. And truthfully, you're paying for convenience. And, you know, Park City is a special place, but it's crazy to see the amount of free parking here. And like I said, that's an outsider coming in. You know, City Tory went to Aspen, and I don't even know where there was a free parking spot in that entire city. And like I said, it just makes people think, because you know, you wanna enjoy this special place we're in. You don't wanna be part of the traffic headache trying to get in and out. And the other interesting thing too to look at is our traffic issue is actually a lot of ourselves. You know, if you ever drive the 248 corridor at 8:15 on a school day, 248 is absolutely just wadded with traffic. Mm-hmm. So you know, everyone always wants to point at it's all the tourists coming into the city, or it's, you know, yesterday it was an amazing ski day and I skied until the lifts closed, and, you know, waited in line to get back out. But it's truthfully mostly ourselves that are actually causing this issue. So it's going to be one of these things that the community is going to have to start trying to figure out. But also, it's also an opportunity, truly, when you think about it. I mean, imagine just being able to not having to worry about fighting for a spot in the Deer Valley or PCMR lots. You can just jump on a bus. You hop off. You're on the slopes. You come back down. You jump on a bus, and you're heading back home. You don't have to worry about, you know, parking and scraping your car and finding a place to park and, you know, which way is the quickest way, or should I drive the back roads to get around? It'll just be, the hope is just to make it second nature. And we're actually working with a PC CAPS program with some high school students to try to figure out how can we just make the bus more enticing for middle school and high school students? Because if we can get those kids hooked before they're 16, and the bus is second nature to them, I mean, that's where the true win is going to be.
Before I built a house in Park Meadows, I lived in Lower Deer Valley and had a couple of bus stops directly on my corner there. I mean, it was like 50 feet away, it seemed. And it was second nature to us. And we, you know, we just wouldn't touch those cars unless we had to go down to Salt Lake or go somewhere else. But yeah, it was just a great, great convenience. So of course, one of the things is that the stops are right there for you. Right now where I am in Park Meadows, I think it's probably like 3/4 of a mile I'd have to walk to get to a stop.
Yeah, and Alfred would be a great person to ask on these, but they're looking at some really innovative concepts that are out there, because Park Meadows is a great idea, a great kind of area. If we can solve that issue, it's called the first mile, last mile. You know, how do you get to the stop, and then how do you get from the stop to where you want to go? And they're looking at some really inventive things. Well, let me use an example of what we actually saw on City Tour that was interesting, that I know we'd be looking at here potentially. And like I said, I'm might be speaking a little bit outside of school, but the thought is, you know, in Aspen they had something called the Downtowner. So it was literally an app. It was free, and it would take you within a mile radius anywhere you wanted to go from the downtown part of Aspen. So the thought was, instead of trying to figure out how to run a 35-foot bus up and down tight streets, you could kind of do this. It's more of a transportation on demand service, and they're small. It's like an electric golf cart size. So maybe that would be an interesting concept for Park Meadows of, hey, we can get you, you know, you get to this major hub and we can kind of get you out from there or back. You know, that's one of the thoughts of the new bus rapid transit piece for Kimball Junction and up here. We just need to get people to these kind of nodes, and then they jump on one of these express buses that'll run you in pretty fast. So that's one of the thoughts.
Bob, I like that idea. What do you think about that one?
I think it's nice. You just got a big job ahead of you getting people out of their cars. And do you have a goal? What is, if we were going to start at A and then go through Z, where do we start?
Yeah, the vehicle one's tricky. The nice thing about the electricity one, and everyone thinks we're crazy for that, is because we're in a coal-heavy state. But the electricity it's an easy number to get to. The car one's based off something called vehicle mile traveled, VMTs. So we want to reduce the amount of VMTs. So in other words, just try to figure that out. And that one's a little bit more of a nebulous on how to measure. So right now, truthfully, I'm focused a lot on the electricity piece, because we're, you know, fed 60% coal, depending on time of year. And we need to get that to 100% renewable electricity in 15 years. So there's some interesting pieces that have to go into that world. The vehicle side, you know, you got to look at the autonomous vehicles with electric vehicles as well, with some of the transit changes. That's moving very quickly as well. And luckily, the city has some dedicated staff to that as well, of trying to figure out, you know, both on the transportation and transit side. So how to get people driving around in their own vehicles the most efficiently, most efficient, and then also for getting on the buses. And I'm tying with that group to look at how can we increase the amount of electrical vehicle charging infrastructure around. So if you have an EV, where do you plug it in? Does it make sense to come up here into Old Town or not? So it's definitely a all hands effort. And my focus is definitely on the energy side. And Right. Then we have the transit and transportation side of folks who, you know, get really nerdy about performance levels of intersections and all this other stuff.
If you're just joining us on KPCW in Park City, this is This Green Earth, and it's Bob Hendricks and John Wells guest hosting today. Our guest is Luke Carton, who's Park City's new sustainability manager. Luke, you have a lot of enthusiasm, which I really like. You know, you're ready to go. I'm curious, was there somebody in your position before, or is this a brand new position?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. The position's actually been around for the city for some time. Actually, the current city manager, Diane Foster, was in it.
Okay.
There was also a gentleman named Tyler Polson, who now works for Salt Lake City, doing sustainability stuff for them. Then Ann Ober and Matt Abbott. So there's been some folks that have been through this position. But when City Council set both the net zero carbon goals and the 100% renewable electricity goals, it really defined this role. So it's myself, and then I've been in my role just over 4 months, and then we also just hired up another person named Celia Peterson, who comes with vast experience. She was running a sustainability program in Northern Europe, and she worked for Nokia and all these other groups. So we're now fully staffed as of about 3 weeks ago, so we're cruising, and we have to get our city operations to 100% renewable electricity and net zero carbon by 2022. So that's 5 years out. Same thing. We've got some plans going on that. We're really going to start tapping into city staff because, you know, the folks who work at the library, the ice arena, our mechanics, they know their role better than anyone else. And those are that's the true brain trust. So we're just starting to reach out to them to hear their thoughts and ideas and hopefully see some drastic changes.
It's the wrong time of year probably to talk about this, but since they're all covered with snow, but rooftop solar, what kind of challenges are we facing there?
Rooftop solar is the soap opera of Utah right now. Mm-hmm. I've never been more excited to read through regulatory documents, and I pity City Council for having to sit through many regulatory documents. So there's a lot of things going on in that. There are two major pieces that were filed by Rocky Mountain Power in the Public Service Commission. One was this temporary holding pool. I'll just skip over that really quick. That's actually suspended. So if you were to put rooftop solar, if you were to put an application in for rooftop solar today, you could potentially get grandfathered under the old rate. Now, the big controversy is, all right, you have rooftop solar on your roof. What should your power bill look like? Rocky Mountain Power says, hey, because you're not using as much power electricity as your neighbors, and you're also using the grid 23.99 hours a day. That's their number. So it's everything except for, I think, 6 minutes. You're getting subsidized by your other ratepayers, about $400 a year. So they want to make up that cost because solar installations have grown exponentially in the state for rooftop. And then utility, it's even the big, big, huge solar installations are growing even faster. So right now in the Public Service Commission, which is the regulatory body that oversees Rocky Mountain Power, there's a little bit of it's a back and forth going on right now. So it's a rate case, and it's under something called a docket 114. And it's a really technical way of saying Rocky Mountain Power wants to change the rate, and then different groups petition to intervene. And there's also these things called temporary stays and all. So it's a lot of, it's kind of a regulatory chess match. The interesting thing where it stands right now is there's a lot of conversations going on. In the 11th hour, though, the filing, there were two really interesting filings that came in last minute. One was from the Division of Public Utilities, and the other one was from OCS, Office of Consumer Services. These are both state agencies. And they said, hey, hold on. We should, you know, either look for a partial ruling or suspend this whole thing or blow it up and start over. Because under Utah law, you can't just make a single electricity rate for a single thing. You need to kind of look at an overall rate case. So they're saying, hey, if this is really going to monkey with your business, we can't just look at this one piece of residential solar.
You have to look at the whole thing.
Exactly. You have to look at, because the utility is regulated. So it's regulated how much profit it can make. So they say, all right, if this is going to monkey with this side, let's slow down and look at a more general rate case. There's in Rocky Mount Power, I mean, utilities are usually a very traditional business model. You know, they're built on assets that are built for 50 years. And now all of a sudden we've got this disruptive technology that's growing in exponential growth. So the question is how fast they need to move to make sure that the utility remains whole. You know, if your utility goes down, you're in deep, deep trouble. So, the question is how fast do they have to go? The city's response in our petition to intervene was, we've got some time. So yes, it's growing more than doubling every year. But the magic number out there is rooftop solar. Once it gets to about 20% of your grid, then there could be some headache. And that's right. Just kind of a general number. Right now, it's the amount of net meters is about 2%. So we've got a few years if we needed to figure this out. And the other thing is when you look at how the residential electricity bill is made, you buy your kilowatt hours, you know, your cost per kilowatt hours of between 8 and 14 cents. Within that, there's also your poles and wires, your transmission, sure, distribution, all these things are baked in. So if Rocky Mountain Power sells you less of that, they're not recouping as much money on their distribution and transmission. So the interesting thing is you could also show that, you know, if Rocky Mountain Power is selling less kilowatt hours and aren't paying for all their poles and wires, the interesting thing is if you look for all residential, then all of a sudden you could actually show that there's a disincentive for truly anyone to really save the residential electricity. Because let's say if we had a groundbreaking technology that came out tomorrow that could, you know, this amazing window that would reduce your electricity bills by 40%, Rocky Mountain Power would be backing up against this as well. So there's a lot of things going on. It's pretty complex, but it can be boiled down to the simple piece of, if you have rooftop solar, are you more of a cost or a benefit to the grid?
First things first, Rocky Mountain Power and these utilities, and we were speaking in the green room earlier, and I think you mentioned that Arizona and Nevada were a little bit more friendly to the utilities in the way that they were set up. But as far as our relationship with them, they actually work for us, don't they? I mean, they're an independent company and everything, but they're licensed by us and all of that. I mean, if they do, and there's the economics of this thing, and, you know, mm-hmm, if you want to connect to the grid, you're going to have to pay something. That's the economics. But at the same time, what you want to do, what I want to do, what Bob wants to do is we want to incent people to invest in solar. We need to do a better job of getting people to do that. And the small little sticking point is holding people back.
Exactly. And you hit on a key piece, and there's a lot of I'll delve into the world of utilities very lightly. So Rocky Mountain Power is actually owned by a company called Pacific Corp, which operates NV Energy, and also they have power in western Wyoming, southern Idaho, parts of Oregon, Washington, that side of it. And Pacific Corp is actually owned by Berkshire Hathaway Energy Services. So they're a shareholder-owned company. They're a large utility. And in a regulated state, a utility can view as a monopoly that has a kind of a set profit margin. Right. So the benefit they get is, hey, you're going to, you know, you can shoot. And their profit margin is not a guarantee. So they can go all the way up to a certain cap. And within the state, under the PSC, the Public Service Commission, there's also these watchdog groups. There's the nonprofits that are saying, hey, you know, you're 60% coal, that's a bad environmental choice. But there's also Office of Consumer Services and like these state watchdogs that make sure, hey, this is being fair and equitable to everyone, especially low-income folks. Where it gets really interesting, because their traditional business model, like I said, is kind of based on these long-term assets. Now, the interesting thing is Rocky Mountain Power and under Pacific Corp, they're going to be shutting down almost 3,000 megawatts of coal-fired power plants between now and 2034. They're already scheduled. They're just old. They don't make sense to run anymore. It has really nothing to do with environmental rules or carbon or anything like that. It's just like when you have an old car and you know, all right, this car is going to start wearing out. So now the question is, what are they going to replace it with? And that's the interesting thing in Utah, is because a lot of these coal assets are very old or getting old, they're going to start shutting them down in the mid to late 2020s. So, and we have abundant sunshine. So I mentioned southwestern Utah when we were talking before. Southwestern Utah for utility scale solar can make power extremely cheaply. It's on par. I mean, there are companies building massive solar farms down there and competing on the open market with energy. So they just kind of dump it in. Now, the question is, all right, sun's not shining, the wind's not blowing. We still need power at our, you know, so when we flip the switch, our lights turn on. So that's where, you know, yes, you still have to build some natural gas plants or potentially operate them better. The big key is actually to go after efficiency. So that way that's just that much less electricity you have to make. But the big nut that's sitting out there is the battery storage. Batteries are, you know, that's going to be a huge focus. And especially now you have two different worlds working after it. You have the energy sector, you know, you want to put a Tesla power pack on your wall and you put in your panels. You know, Tesla just bought out SolarCity, I believe. But you also have the transportation sector. So now cars, you hear about range. You know, range is just battery storage. You know, my car can now go 300 miles on an electric charger outside of it. So there's a lot of focus and technology being dumped into batteries. So as that battery costs, if they start plummeting as fast as solar did, that's really going to be disruptive. So we're really truly in the middle of an energy revolution right now. And no one really knows where we're going to end up. So it's kind of a crazy piece when you look at it from a utility mindset of you're building assets that last 30 to 50 years.
Yeah.
And everything's kind of in disarray because you've got all these competing technologies kind of rushing in to try to make its own, try to make your own electricity.
We were speaking earlier before the show began, and I was telling you about that article I read. It was an interview by Andy Grove several years ago, who was the founder of Intel. And he said that the number one technical challenge for all of us is to get this battery right. And he said that the upside, if we can get it right, is so much greater than the microprocessor and the computer chip ever was. So it's an exciting challenge for all of us. And I know it's a worldwide challenge as you look at the Chinese and the Japanese and the Germans all have a very, very solid efforts trying to figure out this battery stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the interesting thing is, you know, it's just not Utah going through the rooftop solar piece. There's 14 or 16 different states that are actually looking at, have had different types of studies done to see how people putting solar on their roofs affect the grid. And then you look at internationally and the markets are, you know, it's crazy because the, you know, solar and then also large scale wind, offshore wind is very competitive. ERCOT, which is, if you look at Texas, and imagine Texas is an island because it's Texas, they have their own kind of utility grid there. It's called ERCOT. And ERCOT has so much wind on it that sometimes in the middle of the night, like 2 or 3 in the morning when the winds are blowing, their wholesale power rates can actually go negative, which means that they have excess electricity that they don't know what to do with. So they'll actually start, you're getting paid to use electricity at that point. So that's, you know, if you can start cracking these, you know, if you can start figuring out these storage pieces, and then also as solar technologies get figured out and wind technologies get figured out, like I said, it's a really kind of exciting time. It's definitely kind of a wild, wild west because the example that's used is, you know, the original grid was built during the industrial age, you know, kind of just a slow, methodical approach. Now, all of a sudden, our grid is changing as fast as the information age, as fast as computers and cell phones and that side of it. So it's definitely there's some upheaval going on, and it's not going to settle for a bunch of years because there are a lot of exciting and new technology. And the question is who's going to figure it out the best?
So rooftop solar is just a tiny bit of this whole thing. If you were a board member of Pacific Corp, you'd be pulling your hair out at every meeting going, what do we do next? Where do we go? How are we going to fix this?
Yeah, so Pacific Corp has to file something called an IRP, Integrated Resource Plan. And what it does is it says, hey, over all these states, we have all these different assets. And this is how we're going to provide electricity to everyone. And they have to figure out what's going to be the peak of the peak. What's going to be the highest amount of electricity use? You know, summer, hot day, you know, everything's cranking. So how do they build a little wiggle room in that, but then all of a sudden you have all these disruptive technologies coming in. You're not the only game in town that can produce electricity. So you need to figure out how to get that electricity onto your grid in the best way. And then also who feeds it and who moves it around. And then you also have states and, you know, because they operate in so many different states, you have different state legislatures. So Oregon just set a renewable portfolio standard, an RPS, which says, hey, X amount of your energy needs to be coming from renewable resources. And then Rocky Mountain Power also has to deal with, you know, Salt Lake City and Park City. You know, we both aligned our goals around 100% renewable electricity by 2032. That's about 15 to 20% of their Utah energy use. So they have to really start figuring this out soon. And you know, we're working with them to try to figure it out because we both know that we want to get there, and it's just trying to figure out how we can get there the best way.
What are the steps now? Step one, two, and three in this goal.
Whew. All right. So step one and two are actually kind of cruising along. So we actually did a joint study with Salt Lake City and Summit County to look at, all right, when we're saying 100% renewable electricity, what does that truly mean? Mm-hmm. What needs to get built? Because that's the other kind of caveat. We don't want to just hit the goal by just shifting around a bunch of paperwork. We actually want to say, no, this was brought online. So that study will actually be coming out in just actually really soon. So we'll be able to talk to folks about this is what it means. These are the financial, the financial benefits and impacts of it as well. Where would it make sense to site these renewable resources? It'd be great to have some up here so people can actually look, touch, see, and feel it. But there's also a question of, land is not cheap up here and it's not going to get any cheaper. And there's some potential huge winds in like the southwestern part of the state. There's some wind resources in Wyoming. So there's a bunch of pieces. We're going to keep working with Rocky Mountain Power on that. And the other big goal that we're going to really focus in is energy efficiency. How can we let's use less electricity so then we don't have to produce as much going down the road.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to This Green Earth. We're having a conversation with Luke Carton, who's Park City's new sustainability manager. We're going to take a short break for our underwriters, but we shall return right after this. Please stay with us.
This is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local provider for recycling and garbage collection. Help make the holidays a recycled one this year. Gift boxes, wrapping paper, cards, and catalogs are all recyclable. Please no plastic bags in your curbside recycling container. Happy holidays, Summit County. SummitCounty.org/recycle.
Support for KPCW is provided by Sundance Institute, a nonprofit organization. The Sundance Film Festival is proud to call Utah home, with screenings this January 19th through January 29th in Park City, Salt Lake City, and Sundance Resort. The festival's home state is as important to its identity as its filmmakers. Don't miss the world premieres of the best in independent film, along with live music, virtual reality, panel discussions, and more. More information at sundance.org/locals.
Hi, this is Molly from Recycle Utah. Did you know that by recycling 1 ton of paper, we save 17 trees, 7,000 gallons of water, and 463 gallons of oil? Last year, Recycle Utah recycled 590 tons of paper. That's a saving of 10,000 trees, 4,130,000 gallons of water, and 273,000 gallons of crude oil.
Recycle Utah is your local nonprofit recycling drop-off center, bringing water conservation ideas to you for now 25 years, and we support KPCW.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Good morning. Welcome back to This Green Earth. Bob Hendricks and JW here, guest hosts. We are here with Luke Carton, who's Park City's new sustainability manager. Luke, as you look at all these different technologies that we'll be working with, which is, updates on rooftop solar, electric buses, electric vehicle charging infrastructures, air quality, all these different things. If there was one technology and one question that you could have answered that would help to allow us to further this along. Is there one technology? Is there one question that you would like to see taken care of?
Oof, that's a meaty question. There's a couple different things that are interesting things to look at. One would be, and it's the nerdy way to say it is decarbonizing the thermal sector. What the other fancy way to say that is, where can we get natural gas from without having to drill a hole in the ground? If you ever go down to the Vernal area. They have some pretty crazy air quality, and there's been articles written about the poorness of the air quality in the Uinta Basin, and especially when they get snow events, they get a sunny day, they get a really soupy inversion in there, like Wasatch Front quality. And a lot of that's coming off the oil and gas wells. And that's if we can figure out a way to either use, let's say, food waste or something along those lines to really kind of focus in on the natural gas piece, that would be an interesting part. The other thing that I really, truly, it's going to be interesting to look at is jobs in Utah. If you ever look at the Utah jobs report, and you can go online and find it year over year numbers, every single month, extractive industries is losing, it just hemorrhaging jobs. with the new administration coming in and talking about, you know, trying to save coal and natural gas, I'd actually make the point that those are more market driven right now. You know, coal is shutting down because natural gas is actually putting it out of business, and renewables are a lot more are coming in cheaper. So the question is, where's Utah's economy going to go? You know, because you have these wild, the volatility in the natural gas market that, you know, drove a lot of jobs out of here to North Dakota and the Bakken region and all this other stuff. The question is, it's as a state that's official rock is coal. I'm not making that up. What's our future economy going to look like? Like that would be, that's outside the sustainability piece. And you've got some of these, you know, the tourism piece and the, you know, the we're actually the second most biodiverse state in the country behind Hawaii. So there's some really interesting things to tap into on that. But it's, I think the state's at a really interesting crossroads because we're also the fastest growing state in the country. So.
What do you mean by biodiversity?
Biodiversity, yeah. So you actually look at the different types of plants, animals, microorganisms, everything from, you know, bugs to trees and elk and everything in between. We actually have the second most amount of species of any state in the country behind Hawaii, which is kind of crazy. But when you actually stop to think about it, it makes sense. We have, you know, the desert, but we also have high alpine environments and truly everything in between other than ocean. We seem to have it, and we even have the Great Salt Lake. I mean, granted, that's not the most biodiverse. There's a lot of flies and sea monkeys in there, but it's a really interesting thing, and I think that you're starting to see the state really, there's some conversation going on about, hey, we have all these great gems. Let's figure out how to figure this out. So I think that's an interesting piece, and you know, the interesting side for me is, because the energy piece is moving so fast, you know, you have, I'll use another example, solar roadways, crazy idea. Imagine instead of paving our roads with asphalt, all of a sudden they're energy producing. And you start just thinking about the amount of roads around, even if you just did the major corridors, I mean, that's an immense potential of electricity sitting out there. That's just, you know, we're driving over all day.
And you're talking about the new paint products that they have that are able to capture photons and be able to convert them to energy.
Yeah, there's actually a few different types. There's these other ones that look kind of hexagonal. They were actually just installed in a village in France, and there's a city in Missouri that's actually looking at putting it in like a bike path. But it's the ones I'm thinking about are about, I don't know, 18 inches or so thick, but they lay in, they hook together like Legos. And they just literally just draw electricity all the time. They're definitely still prototype phase. Keep my eye on that technology, because imagine even just crosswalks of like being able to power it. And the interesting thing is some of them actually have integrated LEDs, so you could actually have them lit up a little bit. You could use them for different, imagine being able to, you know, looking way out, they'd be able to use them for lane controls in that side of it too. So there's some really kind of crazy technologies out there. And then the other really interesting piece that you'll start seeing coming together is your vehicles. You know, as you get more EVs, that's a huge battery, and you plug it in at your house. So you have that flow from your house, your breaker box in your house to your car. What if all of a sudden we can reverse that? So let's say you know that you're only going to come into the city tomorrow and back out. So you're only going to be using 20% of your battery. Well, why not use 50% of your battery and power your house through the night off of your car? Like there's so many interesting and wild things out there.
Throw it into your own internal grid.
Yeah, and all of a sudden your house and your car are a shared power plant. So like I said, there's a lot of interesting things. And with the battery technology, you'll have the vehicle type that need to charge up fast and discharge fast. Well, those batteries, you know, as they lose that kind of speed to be able to charge up and discharge quickly, they can still store energy. They just can't discharge it as fast. So you're going to see that market for, you know, the slower discharge, the home battery, the business battery really boom as the vehicle batteries boom, because that secondary market of, you know, that battery engine is still good. It just can't go as fast as it used to, but it can still hold electricity. So, you know, if I go to my office and flip on lights, it's not like trying to go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. It's now all of a sudden, well, I'm just turning on my computer, turning on my TV. It's a slower kind of use of energy. Of electricity. So that's going to be a really interesting side. Like I said, it's really wild, and we're right in the middle of it. And sometimes you don't realize how much change you're in the middle of until you've gone through it. And I think we're truly getting in the middle of it right now.
So Elon Musk's company, Solar City, had this capability to be able to grab energy and be able to store it in this battery. They, of course, have been bought by Tesla, which is also Elon Musk's company. How's that offering looking? Is that as promising as some of the marketing?
Right now, you have the, I like to call it the early adopter phase, the person who goes and pays $900 for a new iPhone. But you'll start seeing those come down pretty quickly. So first of all, the solar panels are going to be different. They're going to be, instead of just re-roofing your roof with asphalt shingles and then you overlay solar panels on top of it, you'll just re-roof your roof with solar panels. I mean, they're just it's a roofing product. Dow was looking at it for a while, but SolarCity's definitely gone all in. So you've got that side, and then you've got the Tesla Powerwall power pack piece. And those, if you wanted to go buy one of those today, I think they're about $6,800, which, you know, it'd be a pretty long-term ROI to do it. But as those, as we, you know, discussed before, as the battery packs become cheaper, and then as solar becomes kind of more efficient, and as they figure these things out, all of a sudden, you know, if you're going to re-roof your house and put a battery pack in, let's say you're going to spend $30,000, but you're not going to pay another power bill. In fact, you might not even have to pay much of a fuel bill anymore for your car too. All of a sudden, these things really start penciling out. So the idea is to take the power plant away from the huge centralized big ones that you see kind of all over the state, and it's now your power plant will be your home, and then you might need to sip off the grid every once in a while.
The technology is just amazing when you start talking to you about the things that are on the way for us, the great improvements we're going to see in energy conservation and in the way we live our lives.
Yeah, and like I said, it's, you know, the only example I can really give is cell phones when you think about it. I mean, if you think about back 20 years ago to 10 years ago to now of what the how much phone technology has changed our lives. And outside of the concept of being able to, you know, look at kitten videos, you have the Apple Watch. I'm wearing a Fitbit. You have all these different pieces, but then you also think of the business built around it. Like Uber and Lyft could not exist if you didn't have the smartphone technology you have today. You know, with the geolocation, the internet tie, that side of it. You know, Nest thermostats. It's mind-boggling to think you can actually play with your thermostat if you were on the other side of the world. You can set that. And there are groups that are just trying to jump into that. So go back to the utility side. There's a utility in Missouri that's actually gone out and bought, I believe, 1,500 Nest thermostats, and they're installing them all over. So they're grid peaks. So in other words, the most electricity use is in the afternoon in the summertime because everyone's trying to cool their houses. It's between 3 and 8. So what they do is the utility can actually pre-cool your house starting at 2. So what they'll do is they'll actually turn your AC on, cool your house down from 2 to 3, and then all of a sudden your house will be a little extra cold, and then from 3 to 8 it'll slowly warm up, but it'll stay within that kind of comfort range still. And then at 8 o'clock, you know, it'll kick back on and kind of stay normal. So what they're doing is they're shifting that peak. They're moving, they're flattening the big, huge spike. Now they're kind of taking the peak down and kind of softening it out a little bit. So they're saving their ratepayers' electricity, but it's actually the utility using thermostats to control AC use, which is, you know, and Rocky Mountain Power looked at something called Cool Keeper and these other things. So like I said, there's so many emerging technologies out there that it's going fast. There's a trash company out there. Well, they make trash cans called Big Bellies, and the cities looked at them here. Actually, in my previous role, we bought some, but major cities are now installing networks of these. So they're trash cans with solar panels on the top that have a compactor inside. The really wild thing is they're actually internet accessible. They can talk to each other. So now all of a sudden your public works crew can know what trash cans are full. The trash cans can tell you which ones are full, which one's filling up the fastest. And then also you can actually put a little USB or 110 charger on as well. So they can actually be a mini power source. If you need like a mini street sweeper or charge a battery or something like that, they have that as well. So like I said, it's coming from all different directions. There's companies out there trying to find a new use for old cell phones. There's, you know, cause they have it's a mini computer. The thing has more computing power than the, you know, when NASA sent someone to the moon. I mean,
that's right.
So
hundreds and hundreds of times more. Yeah. I think the original Nest Generation 1 product, if you had it connected to air conditioning as well and you set your thermostat to 72, it would learn your house and over a period of time and make the adjustments. And basically, it's, for an example, at 73, it would shut down knowing that there was so much more coolant in your vents and it was going to be pushed around. So it actually shuts down 20 minutes or 25 minutes earlier. You still get to the temperature, But it's, I mean, this intelligence is great.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then you look at the basic stuff like lighting, LED lights. It's unbelievable to look at that. How from an incandescent bulb to an LED light has, you know, drastically reduced our lighting costs. And the other thing is it's a long life. So, you know, as the, you know, SCPW running, you know, having people make the switch. And that was a huge, huge undertaking by the county and the city. And when you actually look at it, the uptake of LED bulbs is actually more on the conservative side of the county, the eastern side. Because it saves a lot of money, and truthfully, it's great if you have to, if you put a light bulb in and you don't have to worry about changing it out. You know, I jokingly say it's, you know, you have the sustainability side, you just have the sheer laziness because it's a pain in the neck when you have a light bulb burn out and you got to go to, you know, Home Depot or the grocery store to find one. Now all of a sudden you have a bulb that'll last, you know, 10 to 20 years, produce just as good if not better light quality, and it sips electricity compared to, you know, some LED bulbs you're looking at. Your incandescent would use 100 watts. They're using 9. I mean, it's great. It's like I said, it's a really, truly amazing time.
You mentioned in the green room before the program started about shingles, building shingles for your home that would be able to capture electricity. Are those commercially available, or are they just sort of messing around with those right now?
I think everything's commercially available if you have a big enough budget.
Yeah. It's going to cost some money.
I think they're getting more and more. You know, that was the main focus. So that was the big announcement between Tesla and SolarCity. You're going to start seeing them more architecturally pleasing. You know, when we look at the, you know, Park City is a great example. We have that, you know, it's listed on the National Register of Historic Places. I know I got that wrong, and I probably made someone shudder. But you look at, you know, these beautiful old buildings, and how do we allow homeowners to be able to put solar in on the rooftops? That still don't ruin the character of a historic downtown, but also allow them to, you know, be in charge of their own energy destiny. And the city's actually got some, we've got some interesting code for the historic downtown pieces, so we can actually allow it. There actually are more panels in downtown than I realized. As the technology gets more and more, so it'll look more a part of the building and less of, wow, look at those panels, but more of like, wow, are those solar panels? That's where you're starting to see the breakthrough. And that's kind of the next focus. Cause like I said, if you re-roofed your house and instead of just putting normal shingles on, you could put on shingles that made power, that's a pretty great sweet spot.
So culturally, it just takes a little bit of time to move in these areas. I certainly know that, you know, it used to be that these big wind turbines were, you know, oh, there's no way we can have those. And I was in Maui recently, and there was a whole farm of wind machines, and it didn't bother me. It didn't bother anybody.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, in these examples, look at all the tech industries. You know, Google, Apple, Adobe, they're all going for 100% renewable electricity, and it's. Yes, it's a major part of the culture of their company. It's also a really smart business decision. You know, if you look at your power bills, or if you run a business and look at your power bills, you know, they're escalating at, you know, 1.5%, 3% a year, somewhere in that range. Some of these large scale, they're called power purchase agreements, PPAs, will lock in your rates for 20 years or 15 years or something along those lines. So you're now all of a sudden you're making a business decision to say, hey, I can get my electricity at roughly the same cost I can today, and I can lock that rate in for 20 years. Why wouldn't I? So that shows you that sweet spot's starting to get hit between the economics and the feel good.
Well, it sounds like you have a big job ahead of you. I don't envy you. I mean, there's always the naysayers. There's always the half-empty glasses and, oh, we can't possibly do this. And so you just have to let them know that, yes, they can.
Yeah, and truthfully, you know, change is coming whether you like it or not. You can fight or put as many barriers up as you want.
That freight train has left the station, and no one's going to stop it, baby. That thing's coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing is market forces alone are going to take this over. It's getting past the point of, oh, this is just, you know, it feels good and that side of it. Well, you know what? The technology is happening quickly. And then also, like I said, the efficiency side. You can reduce your energy bill really easily in your house, like I said, with a tube of caulk. I mean, you just right. Walk around, feel your windows, see where it feels cold, and you know, 10 minutes of work, you can really seal up your home a lot better. And then you look at, you know, there's furnaces that are 98% efficient, and you've got there's just so many great things going on right there that yeah, you can fight the change as much as you want, but you're just going to be paying a lot more for it.
I read an article in Wired magazine, and this doesn't have anything to do with Park City, but I just found it fascinating because they've been wrestling for years trying to figure out how to get energy out of the changing tides of the oceans. And there's a new technology that's come out. It looks like a buoy, you know, a buoy that you have that's floating. It's not that large, actually. It's not like this big, big farm. It's this one buoy. And then below the buoy are baffles that are movable. And they've found some efficiencies with that that are very promising.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the tide, I mean, I jokingly call it moon power because, you know, the tides are set by the moon. And you look at these buoys that are going up and down with the waves, and it's like, well, that's energy. In the lower Hudson River, they've actually put in, they almost kind of look like wind turbines that sat down there. And same thing, they get tidal currents that go in and out. And that's technology they're still figuring out, but same thing. I mean, the ocean's going to move no matter what. That's a ton of energy out there. So the question is, how do you tap into it?
If you're just joining us, it's Bob Hendricks and John Wells here as guest hosts on This Green Earth. And our guest for the hour, delighted having him here, is Luke Carton, who's Park City's new sustainability manager. We're going to go to a couple of underwriters, and when we return, some final comments. Stay with us.
I'm Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise grants and donations focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our local communities. Grants fund programs that are designed to help kids achieve in the classroom and develop an interest for the outdoors by engaging guests, local communities, and our employees. Information at epicpromise.com.
This is Courtney Johansson with the Spur Bar and Grill, and we are proud to support KPCW. With our new 352 Main Street entrance, the Spur now features three bars serving breakfast, lunch, dinner, drinks, and dancing. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. with live music every night. More information at thespurbarandgrill.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel. 565-4730, ParkCityAirCruiseAndTravel.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, ParkCityBikeDemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
And we are back. We are buttoning up This Green Earth. And Luke Carton, we want to thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Our sponsors, Recycle Utah, Republic Services, Rocky Mountain Power, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design and Park City Mountain, and our newest underwriter, Mark Miller Subaru.
Luke Carton here for the hour. Folks, I think we're in pretty good shape. This guy has a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of good ideas, so it's going to be exciting to see what happens. Again, 2022 and 2032, that's the city. Can you?
Yeah, 2022 is the city operations. 2032 is community-wide.
NPR National News is next. Everybody get outside, have some fun.